Chapter 9. A Concert in Central Park. The following day, Jason and I met Elaine, her roommate Elise, who had played the piano on New Year's Eve, and her boyfriend Scott at an art gallery in Soho. Scott was a fashion photographer, and the gallery had an exhibition of some of his more artistic photographs. I was really impressed by them, and I also enjoyed having the opportunity to meet someone new. Everyone seemed excited to show me what New York was like in the summer. The best thing about New York in the summer is that there are so many free cultural events planned all over the city, Scott said. At least one interesting free thing is organized every day. In fact, added Elise, my favorite event of the summer will be happening tomorrow night. What's that? I asked. It's a free classical music concert performed by the New York Philharmonic Orchestra in Central Park, she explained. Between 200,000 and 500,000 people go to this concert. It's a very special event because the Philharmonic only plays twice there during the summer. Tomorrow is their second and final performance, and you'll be interested to know that they'll be playing some Spanish music. Manuel de Falla's El Amor Brujo is on the programme for tomorrow's concert. You can't miss this, Antonio, Elaine said and turned to Scott and Elise. Why don't Antonio and I go there early to get a place for everyone, and you two can meet us later? Great, said Scott. We'll bring the dinner and the candles. Dinner and candles? I asked, confused. I thought that this was a classical music concert. It is, said Elaine. It's a very special concert. You'll need to bring a big blanket from Jason's apartment. That's all I'll say for now. She then turned to Jason, who had remained silent. I'm assuming that you won't be able to join us because you'll be working. You're right, he replied. I'll try to meet you after my show ends, okay? Elaine, Scott, and Elise agreed to phone all the people who had been at the Thanksgiving dinner and invite them to come to the concert with us. I was excited at the thought of seeing them again, but I was also very curious to see what made this concert so special. I met Elaine at 3 p.m. the following day to go to Central Park. I was surprised to see that she was holding an enormous purple balloon. What's the balloon for? I asked. Everyone else will be arriving at the concert just after 7:30 p.m., she explained. There will be a lot of people there by then, and this will make it easier for our friends to find us. I've told them to look for a purple balloon. Central Park starts on 59th Street. Although we could easily have walked there, Elaine insisted on taking the subway to 72nd Street instead. She said that she wanted to show me something. There was a large, pretty 19th century building on the corner of 72nd Street just before crossing into the park. This is the Dakota Building, Elaine said. John Lennon lived here for more than 10 years. He was fatally shot right here at its main entrance. We stopped walking for a minute and contemplated the building and its entrance. Then Elaine took my hand and pulled me across the street towards the park. There's something else I want to show you, she said. We entered a beautiful, tranquil area of the park. This is Strawberry Fields, she said. It's named after a famous Beatles song that John Lennon composed. Shortly after he died, the city dedicated this garden to him because he liked to spend time here. Countries from all over the world have donated trees or plants for this special garden. There was a circular area in the center of the garden with a mosaic that spelled out Imagine, the title of Lennon's most famous song. Lots of flowers and candles were placed on it. It's been more than 20 years since he died, and people still bring flowers here, Elaine said as we looked at the mosaic. It's incredible, isn't it? Yes, it is, I responded. Thank you for bringing me here. You're welcome, she said, smiling at me. Come on, we have to get a place for the concert. We walked north through the park and passed by a beautiful lake that was surrounded by tall trees. The weather was perfect. It was warm and the sky was completely clear. It's nice to see that this part of Manhattan Island has been preserved in its original state, I said to Elaine. This isn't the way the land originally looked, Elaine replied. Central Park was deliberately designed to look this way by two men called Calvert Vaux and Frederick Law Olmsted. But it looks like we're in the countryside walking through a forest, I said, surprised. Well, that means that they did a good job, doesn't it? Elaine said, laughing. Every path, tree, bush and lake was designed to be where it is. This is one of the first examples of man making nature. The land to make Central Park was bought by the city more than 150 years ago. The city leaders realised that New York was growing rapidly and that there weren't any public green spaces where people could get away from the urban environment. The only places that they could go to were the cemeteries, and that can be pretty depressing. When they decided to buy this land, the city ended at 38th Street. That's more than 1 mile from where the park actually starts. The only problem was that this land didn't have many trees and was actually quite ugly. The city government organised a competition to see who could make the best design for the park. Vaux and Olmsted won the competition. More than 4 million trees and plants were planted here, and the lakes were also designed and built. It took 20 years to finish this park. "Wow, that's an incredible story," I said. "You're right, Vaux and Olmsted did a great job making this park." Just then, we reached an enormous open space the size of at least 3 football fields. There was a stage at one end of it. "Well, here we are," said Elaine. "Let's find a place close to the stage." There were already some people who had placed large blankets down on the grass. We put our blanket down about 20 metres from the stage, and Elaine tied the big balloon to a small rock. We spent the rest of the afternoon enjoying the sun and each other's company. Little by little, the field began to fill with more people setting up their picnic blankets. "Hi there," a familiar voice said behind us. It was Scott, and he was with Elise and José Luis, the Spanish sports journalist. I looked at my watch and saw that it was already 7:30 p.m. The time had passed so quickly. "We've brought some provisions with us," Scott continued. They had wine, fresh fruit, assorted cheeses and pâté, as well as paper plates, plastic knives, forks and spoons, and candles. By the time the concert started, most of the group from our Thanksgiving dinner had joined us, bringing more food and wine. The concert was excellent. I had never heard an orchestra as good as the New York Philharmonic. Once the sky was completely dark, I looked around and saw a very special sight. Everyone in the field, as far as I could see, had lit candles and was eating silently while listening to the music. "This is incredible," I whispered to Elaine. "Everyone is listening quietly to the music." "Of course they are," she whispered back, looking a little confused. "This would never happen in Spain," I explained. "We Spaniards like to talk too much." "You mean like you're doing right now?" she asked. My face turned bright red, and I felt completely embarrassed. Elaine kissed me on the cheek to let me know that she was only joking. I lay down on the blanket and looked at the starry sky for most of the rest of the concert. I understood why she described this as a special concert. It was a chance to spend a lovely summer's night listening to beautiful music with good food and, above all, good friends. It was the most cosmopolitan evening I had ever had.